Everybody knows about it. Everybody knows something has to be done, but we just haven't agreed on what. I'm talking about the drug and alcohol abuse, domestic violence, suicide, disparate incarceration that occurs in the bush. Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. Most agree more local control is needed, but should that control be exercised by tribes? Our phone number statewide and toll-free, 1-800-478-8255-478-TALK. A local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. The Tribal Law and Order Task Force Report, the subject today on Talk of Alaska, statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by the newly restored historic Anchorage Hotel. You can find out more about this boutique hotel in the heart of downtown at historicanchoragehotel.com. The Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority is developing the Kinnick Arm Crossing to further develop the transportation system between Anchorage and the Mat-Su Borough. The bridge could create construction jobs, provide access to land for commercial, industrial, and residential development, and shorten the route to Alaska's interior and North Slope. There's more information on the Kinnick Arm Bridge at kinnickarmbridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Well, the state of Alaska is a wonderful place to practice law if you like frontiers, because a lot of the law in the state of Alaska is not yet formed. It's a young state, and it has an active Supreme Court and an interesting constitution. And that's just the beginning. It also has a different relationship with its indigenous people than any other state in the country. And there's more. We're going to go into the area of the law. We're actually going to be dwelling on the law this week and again next week when our guest will be Supreme Court Chief Justice Dana Fabe, who's been on this program before and knows how to dodge anything specific about cases that are pending. She's good at it. We'll see how the Attorney General is at it right now. Michael Garrity, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Thanks, Steve. It's good to be here.
It's great to have you, and I'm so glad you could agree to come in on short notice to talk about this task force report.
You bet.
The task force was put together under the Tribal Law and Order Act, and it was basically an elite group of people acquainted with Native American issues, particularly the law and order, tribal jurisdiction, and they had to go out and make a report on the state of tribal law and order, and they devoted one whole chapter to Alaska because Alaska is a bit of a special case. And they will continue their work, particularly in relation to Alaska. When the tribal providers comes up early next month, members of the task force will be here to speak with them about that, which I think will be interesting. And this is going to be, there's no doubt about it, what they've kicked off is a process of dialogue, and we are trying to do our part to further that dialogue and get it going here across the state of Alaska with our unique platform that's statewide and goes out into the bush and so forth on Talk of Alaska. So our telephone number is 1-800-478-8255-478-TALK. A local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Email talk@alaskapublic.org. That will probably come in handy if the phones get jammed up here. And now by digital link from Denver, where his law firm's office is located, I'd like to welcome the chairman of the Indian Law and Order Commission, Troy Ide, to our microphones. Hello, Troy. Welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Steve, thank you for having me. I appreciate being here.
Well, you're sounding really great, and I look forward to whatever you want to bring to Alaskans, and so glad you were so willing to engage in this dialogue. I got to say about the report, it's certainly a very well done job, and it does seem to make a case, and rather forcefully, for greater tribal jurisdiction in rural Alaska. Maybe you can give me just a little nutshell on that part of it and why that would be so important.
Well, I had to chuckle. Yeah. I had to chuckle when you're talking about Chief Justice Fabe. I have great respect, of course, for the court. My wife's a state Supreme Court justice here in Colorado, and I know all about judges who have to duck questions. But when you get appointed to a presidential commission, as nine of us did, we were actually asked to do something. and to apply an unvarnished look at the whole picture, all 566 federally recognized Indian tribes. And of those, of course, 40% or 229 of the 566 are in Alaska, and it's a fifth of the state's population. And so we could not ignore that situation, and we were pleased to spend more than a month total in the state of Alaska during our 2 years of work.
Well, the conclusion is there for anyone to read. It's, you have a website, and I assume that will continue to be available. But fundamentally, it says there's not really much choice, that Alaska can't really have a centralized justice system that will serve the bush adequately.
There's no question that Alaska is well-intentioned at the state level, but certainly the policy is out of date. It's not in keeping with U.S. norms or international norms, for that matter, and it needs to be reassessed. The idea that a colonial model can somehow serve people well at this point in our history is a flawed model. It's failed in the lower 48. It was rejected decades ago there. It needs to be reassessed respectfully in Alaska.
And these are not exactly specific recommendations to Congress, though I assume they may come later. But if there is a flaw then in federal law and under federal jurisdiction, I guess this task force wants to see Congress and the executive branch go to work on that.
Well, I think that's part of it. The main issue is simply to acknowledge that there are some good things happening at the grassroots in Alaska. They need to be encouraged, and to recognize that they're based on American values, which are the values of self-government, the idea that individuals should be free of overarching centralized control in how they run their lives, and that everybody's rights ought to be respected, all U.S. citizens' rights. And so those are really the touchstones of our approach and of what we recommend respectfully. Ultimately, it's up to Alaskans how they want to run their state. But it was not up to us to duck. We spent our time there. We heard from literally hundreds and hundreds of Alaskans, native and non-native, and there really was no escaping the need to say that this policy is out of step with the rest of the United States.
Well, probably defending that policy is Attorney General Garrity sitting here with me. And go to it, counsel.
Well, I actually agree with much of what the chairman just said. I read the report carefully in Alaska. I think the newspaper described it as a blistering attack, and that may be an apt description. I thought it could have had a little more balance and context on some of the issues, but on the fundamental challenge to the state, that there is more we can and should be doing to engage in these local communities, to take advantage of the institutions that are in these little communities, like tribal courts, to try to find a way to make their lives better and to enhance public safety. I mean, that message resonated with me, and I believe the governor as well. So I endorse what he's saying. The issue is in the means to get there. I thought one of the recommendations is to essentially kind of unwind the ANSCA model, the Alaska Native Settlement Claims Act. And that was, if you look at Alaska today, over 20 of the 49 largest businesses in the state, Alaska-based businesses, are Native corporations. Four of the top five are Alaska Native corporations. The number one Native corporation just in this year, accounts for about 5,000 jobs in Alaska. Many of those are shareholders. And I've worked for Native corporations in private practice. I know they take that responsibility very seriously, and they sent tens of millions of dollars back to shareholders as dividends over the years. And granted, it hasn't been a straight line trajectory in terms of success. I mean, they've had their ups and downs. But, I mean, if you look at them today, the tremendous success in economic model. And public safety is important, and these village local control, but so are good jobs. So is an opportunity to get a good job, and maybe it does mean you have to move out of your village, but you can live out your aspirations for getting a good job, saving your money, sending your kids to college, and trying to make a better life for them. So I think there's much good that ANSCA did that was not acknowledged in the report, and I was a little disappointed in that lack of context. But again, on the fundamental message, which is how do we do more to enable these local communities? Because we do have a centralized form of state government, and a state as vast as Alaska, which I think the commission certainly acknowledged. We just have to look for new ways to meet the challenge. And I think, I see two groups of constituencies, if you will, two groups. There's tribal activists, attorney advocates, and so on, who, we're involved with in lawsuits and litigation and challenges and so on, and who I think would love to see these recommendations enacted back in Washington, D.C., but I'm sure the chairman would be the first one to tell you that Washington's not the most functional place at the moment, and that's a very problematic view. And so there's that group, and I'm not sure we can find a whole lot of consensus with them, but I'd like to try. But there's another group, and that's the people actually living in these communities. They don't, Washington, D.C.'s thousands of miles away from them. They just want to know and want to ask, what can we do to try to work with the state and use our institutions and try to make our life safer? That is the group that I want to try to work with and the state wants to work with. Now, these other challenges and disputes over ANSCA, should it be repealed or unwound and so on, I mean, will probably continue, but I don't want to hold up the show. I mean, we need to be working with them. And in fact, we started, Steve. We've taken steps already. The governor made a couple of announcements at AFN. And we're pursuing those and following up as we speak.
And some of that will involve empowering, as I understand it, local law and order entities in some way.
Well, that's right. I mean, they have village police officers now, tribal police officers, VPSOs. Again, I thought it would village police safety officers. Less in 2007, there was less than 50 funded or filled positions of VPSOs. Today's in August, we passed 101. The commission points out, and quite accurately, that today over 75 villages have no police presence. But 4 or 5 years ago, it was over 100. So progress is trying to be made, but I granted more can and should be done. And it does involve empowerment, allowing tribal courts, and that's what we've been pursuing, is to try to enter into agreements with tribal courts. And we've just started, I should say. We've sent a draft to Tanana Chiefs Conference. It's a delegation agreement that will allow the tribal courts to impose civil-based remedies for misdemeanors, alcohol offenses, and domestic violence, for example, as well. So that if a person's arrested in the community, they have a choice of either being subject to state prosecution, and we will prosecute them if that's their decision, or if they want to opt in to the tribal court remedy, which would be for a member or a non-member, they have the option of doing that, and the tribal court will fashion a culturally relevant, effective remedy that they deem of their own choosing.
Yeah, well, having followed Indian law and jurisdiction for some while, of course, there's a lot of different ways this can be carefully parsed, and I know that Counselor Ide knows that too. But to keep from going to all these legal points, I like to kind of, keep the big picture in mind, because we all want the same thing in the big picture. So if you took, for instance, the Native Claims Settlement Act, the issue there that bars jurisdiction by the Venati decision is that there's no Indian country. Now, it would take Congress clarifying its intent in order for that ruling, which was written by Justice Thomas, but much of the legal wording of it was worked out by now Chief Justice Roberts when he was working for the state of Alaska. So we're talking a rather strong opinion, probably, in the perspective of the politics inside the Supreme Court right now.
A unanimous opinion by the U.S. Supreme Court, yes. Steve.
Yeah, so it would take some change by Congress to clarify the intent, one would think. But so that's one thing. But nonetheless, it's about Aboriginal title. Right now, the ruling is that Aboriginal title is extinguished. But that would not—Congress could change that. Absolutely,
they could change it. Yeah. And they do all the time. And you know, the Attorney General made some good points, but I want to unwind his points.
Okay, go ahead.
Regarding ANSA,
we're going to unspool everything here, I can tell right now.
No, I know, but it's important to not leave a misimpression with your listeners.
All right.
There's no recommendation to unwind ANSA. We have a recommendation in 2.3 of our report that you ought to allow transfer of lands from regional corporations to tribal governments as a way to deal with the territorial integrity issue and make sure these jurisdictions have the ability to self-govern in a more effective way. And that's it, by the way. And the idea that ANCSA can't be amended is absurd when it was amended 35 different times over its initial life. And with respect, secondly, to the point about tribal activists on one side and local Alaskans on the other, I want to make it very clear. I'm a Bush Republican. I was the United States Attorney under President George W. Bush. My conservative credentials, I know, can stand with General Garrity's and probably just about anybody else's in Alaska, going back for many years. And what's significant about this report is that nine of us, from the far right to the far left, all agreed that Alaska's on the wrong track. So this is not a group of activists. This is a group of people who understands local government. I was a state cabinet officer and a counterpart to General Garrity's for 5 years under a Republican governor. I understand these issues, as do my colleagues. And finally, I appreciate very much this point about tribal courts. When you've got 100 tribal courts or so that are functioning well in different parts of the bush, you need to understand that what the Attorney General is saying is a good thing. Having more ability to work constructively with tribal courts so that they can combat basic crimes like alcohol abuse and domestic violence is definitely the way to go. And I'm very encouraged to have that conversation. There's a lot we can agree on.
And I didn't mean to imply that there was these activists who were on the commission. I meant activists out there in Alaska will look at the report. I didn't mean to imply that the chairman, they're doing their job and certainly his conservative credentials, I don't mean to challenge those. They're doing their job. They came up with these conclusions. I'm just saying people who look at the report, there's that group, I think, that are in Alaska. They're not people associated with the commission necessarily that I think kind of latch onto some of these conclusions and will want to, I don't want to get away from lawsuits. I want to get away from litigation. I hope the message is not to these local communities. Just don't try to sit down with the state. Let's not try to cooperate with the state and see where we can find common ground. Let's hold off because we're going to go to Congress and we're going to get, create Indian country anew and seek these other changes from Congress. I mean, I'm sure that's not the chairman's message, but I hope people out there in the communities we need to deal with look at it in that context as well. We have our differences. I'm not sure we're going to solve those. But as a practical matter, working cooperatively, are there things we can and should be doing? Small steps, but that's what they're asking for, and I think that's reasonable to try to find ways, and that's what we're trying to do.
Well, in some ways, it's very encouraging. The telephone number is 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. It's a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Email is talk@alaskapublic.org. Our guests are Michael Garrity, the Attorney General of Alaska, and Troy Ide, Chairman of the Indian Law and Order Commission, who's speaking to us by digital link from Denver. But we'll be back in the state for the rural providers. Is that right, Troy?
That's correct.
And other members of the task force as well, I guess.
Yeah, I think we're going to have a total of four commissioners there, and we'll do some other outreach as well in the next few months.
And the chairman graciously reached out to my office and offered to meet. Well, and I'm very happy to do that and look forward to seeing him and his contingent when they're here.
Yeah. Well,
we appreciate that, too, very much. Thank you. And I want to say for your listeners, too, and this is in the report and not in a footnote, but we appreciate General Garrity and all the work that his office is doing, that we've definitely had a robust discussion, and that's good. The important thing is to address the issues and to be upfront about it with people.
Well, years ago, there have been repeated efforts to address this. Most recently, there was a state and federal thing U.S. Attorney Burgess, who later became a judge, was involved. I believe Chief Justice Fabe was also involved with this ongoing effort, and they came out with a report, and they also recommended much of what you are also advocating, Attorney General Garrity, of seeing how we can, even using the existing law and system that we have, can more recognize and empower the tribes. And you're working in that direction. But I remember before that there was the Berger Commission, a judge from Canada who came and held extensive and lengthy hearings all over Alaska, heartbreaking testimony about the problems in rural Alaska and how the Native Claims Settlement Act had not worked. And this was aimed at the 20-year anniversary of the Act, 1991, when there would be opportunities to amend it. The Alaska Federation of Natives then, around 87, 88, started looking at how do we get amendments, because we otherwise, our Native corporation stock will become alienable, and it'll get out of Native control. There's a risk there. We need to have some kind of way of keeping the stock in the hands of the people that should have it. And they needed that amendment. But what was also brought up was the question of tribal jurisdiction, debated extensively and with a great deal of emotion. And the effort was to, let's try and amend ANCSA as well, to deal with this Aboriginal title issue and allow for the transfer of lands, the very thing this new commission is recommending, from the corporations to the tribes. And it was thrown out. It was not advocated for by AFN. They said, we have to simplify it. We have to get the stock inalienability. But we're not going to forget this other thing. But they may not have forgotten it, but they never really quite put their power, their corporate power, their political power behind trying to get the transfer of these lands. Maybe the time has finally come for that.
Well, you'd have to obviously solicit the views of the Native corporations. I don't know. I think, you know, there's a bit of irony, and I have to apologize to the chairman because I've not read the complete report yet. I focused on the section dealing with Alaska, but I have some of the attorneys that work for me have. And you know, there's a lot of problems with the traditional reservation model, the traditional Indian country model.
That's one of the reasons we have ANCSA, because people knew that locally. They didn't want that.
They were, and Natives were, interests were very much involved, of course, in the ANCSA negotiation. They had to be, and they were adamantly against that model, and I think with good reason. And so I think it's a bit of an irony that the commission would recommend we go back to that model. And I'll be, again, I haven't read the complete report, so there may be refinements or nuances, and I don't want to misrepresent that. But I think creating these patchwork, we have 229 tribes, federally recognized tribes in Alaska, and, you know, the notion that dozens of those would create their own jurisdiction and create their own criminal code and tribal court and all the resources and everything that requires, you know, to me is a bit, I question the efficiency of it and if that's the way to go. And especially when we looked at, you know, there's many issues with these traditional reservations in the lower 48. Now, having said that, I think it's incumbent upon the state to find a way to deal with the issues that are driving this, which is lack of local control, lack of empowerment. So that, to me, resonates. We need to do something if we want, if we don't want ANCSA, if we don't want Indian country created up here, and we don't want to go back to that model. We have to get involved with the tribes and those communities that want to be empowered, they want to take control of some of these issues and have a chance to police them themselves. We need to work with them.
Well, Chairman Ide, I guess you would dispute that, I mean, factually, saying that at least for allotments, we could already have some jurisdiction, and that the transfer would then be what?
Well, a couple things. I mean, first and foremost, nobody's advocating a massive return to the old days of the reservation system, and I actually have read the report and wrote a whole lot of it myself, and I got to tell you that that's not at all what our recommendations are, as I'm sure Mr. Garrity's staff will find. Our recommendation is based on a basic premise. The federal government is the main source of the problem. The federal government created congressionally authorized state jurisdiction, such as the Public Law 280, and ultimately the whole ANCSA framework, and it also created the nightmare of the reservation system. To the extent we get rid of overarching, overweening, overbearing federal and state control of local government, all Americans can be safer and more just. And that is the guiding premise of this report through its 324 pages. So I just want to dispel that red herring as well. We do agree on the concept of self-government, and it can be arranged in a lot of different ways that people are able to adapt to their own situations. Different tribes and villages working together collaboratively to create institutions is one approach. Another is to contract on a more equal basis with the state for services, rather than to be dictated to and told that your tribal court decisions are not going to be fully enforced when you've got natives who are trying in these villages to simply live their lives, combat the 95% problem, which is alcohol, deal with the fact that domestic violence rates are 10 times the average of the rest of the United States. How can you suppress local government when that is your whole power and your accountability to deal with local problems? The idea that the state or the federal government could ever play that role, to me as a conservative, is completely offensive and represents a sort of early 20th century view that's been discredited around the rest of the United States.
So, however, has gotten around the Indian country problem, what you're saying as chairman of the task force is something needs to be done to get around it.
Absolutely. And ultimately, I think Alaskans can be trusted to really look at these issues and say we can come up with a better system, one that's not based on such an overly centralized model that is, in too many cases, holding down local communities from solving their own problems.
Well, what we're
seeing
here is... I don't
understand the philosophy of that.
Yeah, well, what we're hearing from the Attorney General is the possibility that the offender themselves could elect to either have tribal jurisdiction or not. How does that sit with you?
Well, I think, again, it was not our purpose and not our intention in the report, nor did we say this is how Alaskans have to solve this problem. Mm. It is simply to say that the current approach, the presumption that tribal governments can't be trusted to govern themselves and protect rights, is a flawed approach. It will be safer in the bush once there's more freedom for self-government, just as is the case in the rest of the United States, particularly in Indian country, where tribes have been permitted to exercise their concurrent jurisdiction to solve their problems. In virtually every case, we found a reduction in violent crime. Where the federal government plays a lead role, we find more violent reservations. And I'm calling you from Colorado, and it's a great example here. We have two Indian nations in my state. Ute Mountain Ute has a federal police department and a federal court. Southern Ute, which is right next door, sister tribe, has its own law enforcement services. Violent crime rates are dramatically lower, more than 20 times lower on the Southern Ute Reservation because of self-government. I would respectfully submit that those are the kinds of lessons that apply universally, and especially in an exceedingly rural jurisdiction with the geographical challenges that Alaska has.
Let's go to Anchorage, where Don joins the program. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Don.
Oh, thank you very much. I'd like to say to start with, I concur very much with what your chairman just stated over there in the commission. I have been up here in Alaska since 68, and I've seen an awful lot of people come and go from the bush, and they're just appalled at being caught up in dual or triple judicial systems that supposedly overlap, and for them, yeah, it's totally confusing. I've also seen within some of the prison systems of places like where they have the potlatches and things, whether they're up here or down in Arizona or wherever, things are smoothed out much more readily and handled much more calmly when you have native factions that can get together and try to resolve their own problems, whether it's through cultural exchanges and sweat lodges or whether it's through potlatches where additional relatives and friends and family are allowed to come into the prisons for visitations. All these things add up as far as affecting the outcome of a person's attitude toward rehabilitation. And if you want to really get some good rehabilitation. You don't go in, take somebody, drag them out of their home, village, whatever, and ship them thousands of miles away. I mean, this is, you know, this is tantamount to what the British were doing when they were sending people down to Australia. And it's not the kind of thing that really condones families and keeping families together and whatnot. Flies in just the opposite direction as far as the having the defendant have a choice. The defendant is being restricted in many ways and has been for decades. One of my primary gripes has always been that they're treated like little school kids. Sit down, shut up, and do what you're told, and all we want to hear is from your lawyer. That's not what the Constitution guarantees. The Constitution guarantees you have a right to assistance of counsel for your defense. And if he's not acting for your defense, then you better get somebody else that will.
Don, that's very well thought out remarks.
Well, there's a few decades of experience in there, but I think what probably the biggest headache is, like a lot of things, government doesn't really want to give the locals an opportunity to prove that they are and can be responsible and handle things on their own. And the Fed is supposedly, my understanding of the Constitution, Madison, Jefferson, the rest of them, the intent was to unite the states in relatively common laws so that they could handle things on their own. This outcry of states' rights I keep hearing periodically from all over the country, by the way, and splotches, whatever you want to call it, when you hear that come out, and then all of a sudden you hear things like tribal rights are to be disregarded, but states' rights are to be respected. There's something very ambiguous about that.
All right, Don. I want to let the Attorney General respond, but I think we better take our half-hour break here, or we're going to go way over. So if you take a minute to think about it, Attorney General Garrity, and we'll be right back as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by Providence Imaging Center, helping cancer patients stay in Anchorage with a PET scanner that fuses anatomical and functional images since 2004. Learn more at provimaging.com. The Older Persons Action Group, publisher of Senior Voice, Alaska's only statewide newspaper for older Alaskans and their families, can be read online at seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
The phone calls are mounting up. The telephone number 1-800-478-8255. It's a statewide discussion of tribal law and order in Alaska. We have the chairman of the Indian Law and Order Commission and the Attorney General of Alaska, Michael Garrity. And our last caller, Don, was basically saying often Native entities anywhere in the country don't get respect, particularly from the states, and it's kind of a paternalistic attitude. And the Attorney General, I'd like to ask you to, you know, defend that or respond.
Well, I think the caller made some good points about the prison system and so on. We know we have opened up a new prison here in Alaska, and many prisoners are being shipped home. And I don't know the exact numbers on that, but I would certainly agree that it's better to have the prisoners housed in their home state if at all possible, and that's the goal that the state's been working towards. And again, I just don't know the exact numbers on those. But the self-government, of course, is important and one we acknowledge. Well, we have to keep in mind in many of these villages, I mean, there's non-natives there. There's non-tribal members living there. They're all citizens of the state of Alaska. They're all guaranteed rights under this constitution of the state of Alaska, but they don't get to vote on the tribal council. So is it self-government if you have significant numbers of people in these villages? And the numbers are, I mean, they're not insignificant. I mean, depending on where the village is and so on. But so that's one of the dilemmas we have to wrestle with as a state government. So somebody is arrested for an offense. If they want to go through the state criminal system and get a criminal record potentially, I think that's a choice they need to have. But if we hope for the misdemeanors and alcohol type offenses or DV offenses and so on that we're attempting to delegate to the tribes, that they would elect to go accept the tribal remedy, which is, and if they do, then the tribal court will impose a civil-based remedy and something that's relevant to them and circle sentencing, whatever restorative justice concepts they want to work, but that would be up to them. But we have to be careful about self-government because there's many people in these villages that it's not their government. They can't vote on it. What say do they have in it?
Well, I'm sure that Chairman Ide heard this particular one many times.
Well, I did, and I appreciated Don's call here. I know all about the British and the British colonial system. My dad came from Egypt with $100 in 1957, so I know a colonial model when I see it. I'm not trying to inflame anyone. The premise is valid, though, and the idea that a colonial system can somehow take the place of a local self-rule has failed around the world, not just in the British Empire, and it's failed, I would respectfully submit, in Alaska. And with all due respect to my friend General Garrity, he can't vote in Colorado elections, but if he happens to show up in my state, I sure as heck hope that we'll enforce the law against him. And vice versa, if I commit some kind of an offense, a criminal offense defined by the Alaska Criminal Code, I ought to be held accountable when I visit there. I mean, the bottom line is I'm not electing anybody as an Alaska elector. I'm a citizen of the state of Colorado. But we have a means, we've found a means to protect people's U.S. constitutional rights. And we should try to do the same thing with an appeal process out of tribal court. And the rest of our report talks about how to do that. It's very important to understand that we are not in any way advocating a watering down of people's federal constitutional rights. But the fact that you can't vote in an election, again, another red herring, it doesn't make any difference as long as your rights as a U.S. citizen are respected.
Well, let me just say, I guess it depends on the citizen, doesn't it? And if they've lived in a community for many years and they have no say or right into vote on who's on the tribal council, who's going to be in the tribal court, the laws that are created by the tribal court. I mean, I guess I'm not quite as sanguine about it as the chairman.
Create a speedy trial right for them. You know, let them appeal directly out of tribal court, exhaust their remedies on the state speedy trial act, for example. And then if there's a constitutional claim under the Alaska Constitution, put them in the state system. But the bottom line is that there are ways to come to an agreement about this without compromising anybody's rights. And in the first instance, you know, the fact that you can't vote in someone's election ought not to be dispositive because it would essentially prevent the U.S. from being a union of sovereign states. That argument does not hold water, I don't think.
Well, I respectfully disagree. We're talking about people that live in these communities, not that move there and commit a crime. I mean, they're people live in these communities, live there possibly for generations. So to say that it doesn't matter if they can't vote on who governs them, I respectfully disagree. Now, having said that, the point he made about there should be ways and there are ways to address these concerns, I agree with that as well, and that's what we're trying to do. But I'm not as sanguine about these issues of self-government when it comes to individual rights that people are guaranteed under the state or federal constitution.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, it's not even just Indian country and res and so forth. I mean, when a person who's not of the tribe and goes and lives on the res does accept, you know, you're going to live under the rules of the people that run the res. That's kind of how it works. And it's much the same in any other kind of community. You know, I might not agree with my mayor here. I frequently do not agree with my mayor here, but I still understand his jurisdiction and those policies. They're going to hold sway. I do get a chance to vote in that. So, but still, anybody has to abide. What Mr. Ide is talking about here is essentially you can have the jurisdiction and then still ensure the constitutional rights through an appeal process.
Well, I would like to think that's the case. I mean, I think we can do that now without Indian country, quite honestly. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's where I'm going with this, is that I think we can, and the state will have to, you know, approach this in good faith, as will the tribal courts. But I'm you know, and they you touched on this in the report, talking about MOUs between the tribes and the states to try to accomplish different things. And I mean, I'm all for that. And I, because again, I come back to the fundamental issue with which I do not disagree with the chairman, that we need to do more to try to find a way to deal with these issues in these local communities. And if there's institutions there like tribal courts, we need to work with them and take advantage of that. That's a win-win, potentially, for the state and the tribe. And that's what I want to work on and explore.
Let's go to another call. This is Ben, joins the program from Kiana. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Ben.
Thank you for having me. I'd like to question the Attorney General on an issue on the apparent authority and actual authority. Can you explain the actual authority and apparent authority of the state? And also, I don't consider myself a U.S. citizen. I live in the village. I am Inupiaq, so-called Eskimo, but I am not a U.S. citizen. Can you explain U.S. citizenship also? And I'll listen, hang up and listen. Thank you very much.
All right, Ben, thank you very much. So actual and apparent authority.
Well, we learned those in law school. I'm not sure that's the same thing the caller's referring to, but I do believe the state has actual authority under our Constitution. I don't think that the commission disagrees with that. I think the commission disagrees that we're slavishing too much attention on our authority, actual authority, and not looking at ways to deal with these issues, these severe issues that exist in these small communities. So I'm not sure that it's an actual or apparent authority issue. And if I missed the caller's intent, I apologize. And I would say he is a citizen of the United States. And I appreciate his allegiance to his tribe and his affinity with his tribe. But he is a citizen of the United States, as we all are. And I think, for good reason. I hope he never comes to a situation where he has to invoke or rely on those rights he's guaranteed in the Constitution. But, he is a citizen, and that's
right.
Not to say I disagree with my federal government.
Yes, I don't think the commission chose to go into the Treaty of Session and so forth. You didn't quite go back that far, did you, Chairman Ide?
No, we didn't. And I will say, though, that we set a national goal in our report that by the anniversary of the Indian Citizenship Act of 1924, the centennial, that's coming up very soon. And so within that next decade, we want to try to close this public safety gap that exists between so much of Native America and the rest of the country. And so we have many other recommendations for doing that. But in 1924, all Native people in the lower 48 at that time in the states became U.S. citizens by operation of something called the Snyder Act. And I certainly agree with the Attorney General that Ben is a U.S. citizen. And I also would go another step and say that the United States is really the great hope that we have for the ability of tribes to be able to self-govern in this era. That is to say that only our system of government can really respect this right of self-determination and guarantee the individual rights that I think we all revere and respect. And that's another universal premise, I think, of what we're trying to do here. We want to make sure everyone's civil rights are protected.
There is one point where I believe the words were last remnant of the termination era to describe the ANCSA corporate system.
Well, ANCSA, as you know, came at an interesting time. We had survived what's called termination, the period of time after World War II, when it was the federal government's new policy to really stamp out the remains of many of the tribes. And, it was a very short time thereafter that the United States did a wholesale change in its policy to favor self-government, self-determination. It started with President Nixon, and every president since has endorsed it. Republicans, Democrats, and the Congress each session have endorsed that policy of self-determination, beginning in 1975. And so It is true that ANCSA occurred at a moment in history when tribal nations were thought to not have much value by the United States government. That is a radically different concept of the world we live in today. So the extent that ANCSA ought to be revisited, it should be viewed in terms of what we've learned since 1975, which is that more self-government and respect for individual rights lowers crime. And that's our whole point, is to try to make these communities safer and more just for everybody, Alaska Native and non-Native alike.
Do you think that the funding for tribal courts, should jurisdiction be ironed out, what we find is the corporations have all the money, the tribes don't have any money usually. Is that fall in the realm of the government-to-government relationship, or should that in some way be a state responsibility?
Well, it's an interesting debate, and I'd be very interested in the Attorney General's views on this, and it's part of why the dialogue is so important. It seems to me that tribal court monies can be very well spent. There's a lot of value in having more effective and predictable systems in many of these villages, building from the 100 or so that are in place. And there are capabilities vary widely, as is known throughout Alaska. Some of them are very, you know, well-developed systems, and others are partial systems, and some are very informal. But the bottom line is that focusing on what works, which is local justice systems to deal with local problems, particularly with respect to the crimes that plague these communities, so many of them involving alcohol and substance abuse. We want to make sure that they're up to standards that can protect everyone's rights. If there's a need for an appeal process out of tribal court, it could be federal, but more likely in Alaska, it would be perhaps a state process. Whatever is worked out, though, I think these are monies well spent, and that is part of focusing on this overall architecture. The goal is no longer, as it was in 1971, to do away with the tribes, and that was the goal of ANCSA. It was very clear that it was a last gasp of federal termination policy, as we describe it in the report. But that's not where Alaska is today, because its own elected members of the U.S. Congress are on record in saying that they do not support that policy.
Once again, I want to do the break before we go back to you, Attorney General Garrity, as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska. Alaska Business Monthly Magazine, publishing statewide news on Alaska's business sector, government, and industry since 1985. Information and subscriptions online at akbizmag.com. And by Alaska Premier Dental Group, providing full-service dental care for the entire family with 3 offices, 2 in Anchorage and 1 in Wasilla. Service information at smilealaska.com.
Well, what a surprise. We're running out of time. Only got 10 minutes left and way too much to talk about. Back to Attorney General Garrity, you've been sitting here patiently listening through this, and we were mostly talking about who pays for tribal law enforcement. And there is some precedent now of dissolution of local municipal government in favor of a tribal entity of some sort, which then does receive whatever it is of revenue sharing and so forth. So we've been moved some, the time I've been in Alaska, moved some direction towards state resources being used for by tribes.
And I have an open mind about that. I think that's a policy decision for the administration. I agree with much of what the chairman said. I think the funding for the tribes that exist thus far has come, I'm assuming, from there's a Department of Tribal Justice, I think, and the Department of Justice that maybe issues of grants. I frankly am not real familiar with that, and I defer the chairman. But I think if it's a win-win, I mean, I don't see a philosophical problem with finding a way to make the courts more effective. I think, but we need to start, and we've started down this path. Again, I want to emphasize, the governor announced these initiatives at AFN 2 weeks ago, and we've since rolled out the agreement. We've been working on it for a number of months, and so we've started. I was encouraged by the initial response we received from the Tanana chiefs, but they clearly had questions, they had concerns, and they were cautious. But, I mean, I think the response was positive, and we want to sit down with them at their earliest convening to start working through the issues. And I You know, nothing's chiseled in stone. I want to find a model and make it work and start growing it throughout the state. And then issues about funding for either more tribal courts or funding the ones that exist so they can do this delegation agreement more effectively. I've got an open mind.
And when do you think the public might be able to see some of this?
Well, we enter into the agreements with each individual tribe. I'd really like to have, you know, one template or close to one template to use. I'd prefer not to have 60, 70, 80 different agreements. And so we were under the auspices of TCC, which is a proactive advocate and supporter of tribal courts. We've asked them if they would kind of bring to light generic and kind of overriding concerns that are probably reflective of all, you know, the tribal courts within their region. And let's try to work through as many issues as we can. And then we will need to sit down with each tribe, and there may be.
Do you think there might be something in time for the rural providers when the tribal commission people are back up here?
Well, I'd hope so.
CC would hope.
Well, I hope so, and I hope to meet with the chairman when he's here and share a draft with him, get their thoughts. And I know there's nobody has a monopoly on wisdom here. I'm not seeking his favor,
I'm seeing all kind of movement here. What do you think, Chairman Ide?
Well, if you meant draft like a draft beer, that sounds good too. So.
Thank you for that. It's past lunchtime in Denver.
I was just going to say that I appreciate the comments, and you know, it's we can get hung up on certain issues that are hot button issues, or we can really work to try to resolve the problems in a sequence. And you know, I'm mindful that the Alaska Supreme Court had held back in John versus Baker back in, I think it was 1999, that tribal courts have the authority, the inherent sovereign authority, to regulate domestic affairs, regardless of whether there's federal Indian country in Alaska. Now, our report suggests that there is quite a bit of federal Indian country in Alaska, that there should be more of it, but that should not cause those who oppose that to tune us out. We think that the overarching first step is to be able to have a discussion about local empowerment, local self-government, and again, protection of people's rights. As a way to reduce violent crime. It's never going to be the case, I suspect, in Alaska, given the geographical and financial limitations, that you're going to have a remote policing authority that's going to be able to keep the peace in a way that needs to be done. You need much more on-the-ground presence, and that's going to require those who live in the villages to have enough authority to take control over their own lives and to have the means to make it stick.
Well, here's one I would be remiss if I did not bring this up, and I'm sure you heard this when you went to the villages the first thing, which is, we know who the bootleggers are. We just can't get anything done about it. If we had the power, we could finger these people, we could gather the evidence, and we could make sure that these people cut it out. You know, it's a question of how you get there. And I think Attorney General Garrity here would agree.
Well, I would agree. And you know, we've been talking about this delegation agreement that I've been referring to, which I think is the more critical of the two agreements. We've also, the governor mentioned an agreement to, an MOU, if you will, to enter into with tribes or in dry villages. That would, many of these villages and communities are second-class cities, as a matter of fact, under Alaska law. So under the laws that exist right now, they can pass a statute and adopt a diversion panel, if you will, put elders on it, whoever they'd like, and if there's, get the MOU signed, if there's an alcohol offense in each village, they can just grab the booze and pour it out. And you know, it's not going to be evidence in a state criminal prosecution, which would otherwise be the case, and have all this machinery of justice going on. They want something, a remedy right now that's effective. And then, again, with the diversion panel that could have tribal elders or whatever the case, come up with a, you know, culturally relevant remedy for the offender. So, you know, that's the second issue, which I'll talk about. We agree in principle, a lot of these things. We do have, and I'm afraid we'll continue to have, frankly, differences about the law and the significance of some of these cases and so on. I don't want to get hung up on those.
All right, we're down to 3 minutes here, and I would like to get one more call in. So you want to finish up your point?
No, go ahead, Steve.
All right, and Chairman Ide, going to try to get another call?
Sounds good. Thanks, Steve.
All right, Walter in Anchorage, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Thank you all for the discussion. It is refreshing to hear people willing to talk about an issue versus just rah-rahing on their soap stands. My question statement is, somebody made it a point earlier referring to colonial law for shipping people to the cities for prison and serving their time. How's that any different than a standard everyday citizen getting shipped off to Arizona? Trust me, I would think that's cruel and unusual punishment.
Yeah, and the Attorney General kind of agrees with you, as he's already said. But, I mean, you know, who's going to build a jail in the bush and who's going to pay for it? And, I mean, that's money.
It most certainly is. But once again, it's money to take care of them on the school front, and we treated education much like we did the prisons for days and days and days. And is the crime because there's no law, or is the crime because they're not self-guiding? And hey, if they want to govern themselves, that's fine, but they had issues long before we came, so...
All right, go ahead.
Steve, just to clarify, I don't agree that shipping a prisoner outside of course is cruel and unusual punishment.
No, of course you couldn't. It's a legal thing.
I do agree that it's not the most effective type of system that we can have. And, you know, in addition to these, this whole issue that the ILOC has brought up and prompted this discussion we're having, I mean, the state's looking at many issues. I mean, who is going to prison nowadays? Do we need to look at some of the offenses, the classifications of some of the offenses? Are we keeping nonviolent offenders in jail too long? Do we need to reexamine all that? Attorney General Holder has announced a similar initiative on the federal level. I don't know if Colorado has done anything, but I mean, that's a whole other discussion. It's a very important one that the caller brought up. But
yeah,
and it's not just in the bush either.
Yeah, we're going to have to revisit that one in a future show here. But Troy Ide, Chairman of the Indian Law and Order Commission, I'm going to let you have the last word for all 20 seconds of it or so.
Yeah, I was just going to say it's not just in the bush. I mean, just take Fairbanks, where we visited a women's shelter, and we also met with law enforcement dealing with juveniles. I mean, one of our findings is that Native youth who come into contact with the juvenile justice system in Alaska are four times more likely than non-natives to be referred to juvenile court, three times more likely to be sentenced to confinement. These are the lingering effects of a system that is designed in the wrong way. Focus on protecting local control, not squashing it.
Thank you, Attorney General Garrity. Troy Ide, thanks to Monica Goki.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by First National Bank of Alaska, offering business solutions to help Alaska's dreams grow for more than 90 years. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC. Many Alaska business owners are paying too much for energy. The Commercial Building Energy Audit Program identifies an average of 30% in energy savings. The application period runs November 1st through December 20th. To learn more, visit akenergyefficiency.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Energy Authority. Alaska's Tobacco Quitline is ready to help you succeed in your decision to quit tobacco. Take advantage of proven successful free resources. Trained quit coaches will provide support services to help you quit for good with confidential counseling. There's free nicotine replacement therapy and a tailored quit plan just for you. For more information, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit alaskaquitline.com. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.